All right, so we are holding on Yud Aleph Amud Beis, above the middle of the Amud, the line begins after. Really, technically today should have been Dr. Gimel, but I don't expect us to get quite that far. We'll see how we fare. There are much shorter blocks later on in the set, so I'm not overly worried about being behind, but we'll see. All right. So, Bominer of Huna Mirav Ami. Tosis points out over here, the usual Rabbi Ami, who we have in Shas, was actually on a lower level than Rav Huna. He was one of the great Amidolim in Eretz Yisrael, but he was still subject to Rav Huna as far as that Rav Huna knew more Torah than he.
They were both
Rosh Yeshiva, one in Eretz Yisrael, one in Babel. But Rav Huna was on a higher level than Rabbi Ami. Over here, you have Rav Huna asking Rabbi Ami something, so Tosis asks on it, but that is why Hagoyis Habach changes it to Rav Ami, in which case that was somebody else. That may have been somebody from a previous generation who is greater than him. Anyway, he asks the question as follows. Echad b'mnei b'mavri, suppose you have a person who has their house opens out to a chaser, which in turn opens out into a mavri. Shabikish lahachse pischei l'mavri achad. Suppose now he wants to make his door go out to a different mavri instead. So right now he has, for example, that his chaser is, let's say, for example, so you have one mavri over here, the other one over here. His chaser is in the middle. Like this, he has an opening out to this mavri, and he goes in and out through it. Now he wants to open up a doorway to go in and out this way.
And keep the other one open.
That's something that Mefoshim discussed, because let's learn the next line, and we'll see how we understand it according to the different possibilities. We say, the question is, B'nei mavri ma'achvin olav, or ein ma'achvin olav, can the members of the mavri prevent him, or can prevent him from doing so or not? Now, Rashi learns we're talking about the members of the new Mavri, in which case it gets into the question of, are we talking about then necessarily that he wants to close up his doorway to the old Mavri and only go in and out through the new Mavri, in which case maybe they have reason to not let him do that because they're going to have more foot traffic in their Mavri then. Or maybe are we talking about that he wants to leave both of them open, and then the problem is that the people of the new Mavri have reason to be concerned. People from the old Mavri will use his chaser as a shortcut out to their Mavri. That's one way of looking at it. The other way of looking at it, that which many Rishonim learn, is the question is rather, can the members of his original Mavri prevent him from doing that? In which case, again, you can discuss, are we talking about that he wants to close up his entrance to their Mavri and only open one to the other, in which case the Rambam learns it that way and says the problem is that, let's say, for example, taxes are assessed on each Mavri a certain amount and then it's divided up among all the households. If he now closes up his entrance to the old Mavri, they're going to be paying more. They're going to have a tax liability. Many other Rishonim learn not like that. They say that's not the issue. We're talking about, rather, that the members of the old Mavri can prevent him because, again, if he has an opening to this Mavri and an opening to this one, now people can go back and forth through his chaser, and they're going to have more foot traffic in their Mavri.
So there's actually four ways.
So there's a bunch of different ways of understanding it, exactly. Amalei, so Rav Ami answers him, B'nei Mavri Ma'achvin Olav, yes, the people of the Mavri can prevent him from doing that. Again, his original Mavri or the other Mavri, as the case may be, according to the different explanations. Also, he asks, here's another question. Achsania.
So now we're switching to another
topic. Now we start switching to another topic.
We didn't resolve this.
He answered, the name of him, Ma'achvin Olav, yes, Rav Ami. In the Gemara, we just have B'nei Mavri. When Rav Huna asked the question, and Rav Ami answered it, and Ravina and Rav Ashi wrote it down in the Gemara, it was clear to them which Mavri they meant. By the time you come to the time of the Rishonim, a few hundred years later, it's no longer so clear. But that's the way it is a lot of times in the Gemara.
And the halacha is what, one or the other?
The halacha in Shulchan Aruch, again, when you have different Rishonim like that, you don't necessarily have... many times the halacha is like the Rambam, not always, but yeah. It may also depend what the circumstances over here. Are we talking about that it's a matter of taxes? Are we talking about that it's a matter of foot traffic, etc.? Okay. Another question he asks him, Achsanya. What about if you have... So Rashi learns... Achsanya literally means guests. So Rashi learns that it means guests that you're required to have, namely to have soldiers quartered in your houses. This is before the Fourth Amendment or the Third Amendment or whichever one it is that soldiers can't be quartered in houses in peacetime. This is long before that. So when soldiers are in town, the people of town are expected, they have to put them up in their houses. Yes. So the question is, l'fi b'nei adam mischalekes or l'fi p'sachim mischalekes? How does it get divided up? Do we go according to how many people live in each house? Or do we go according to the number of doors that a person has? Those were two different ways, apparently, that they had, where they could, where the government could decide how many soldiers are going to be quartered in your house. Other Mefoshim learn that Rabbeinu Hanano quotes Rabbeinu Hanano that the question about Achsanya rather is over here. Suppose you have guests who came into town and they brought you animals into your chatzer and they left fertilizer. Many different people own the chatzer jointly. You have a bunch of houses open down to the chatzer. So who gets a proportional amount of it? You go with the number of
that.
People. We had similar topics in Bava Kamma. And Rabbi Ami answers him, you go according to the number of people.
In the
as far as the quartering of the soldiers or as far as the fertilizer, as the case may be. Tanya Nami. When we say the Fibnei Adam means how many people are in the house, in other words.
But you're gonna have more people in space.
So, but
that's
20 bedrooms.
That's what we mean. In other words, the Fibnei Adam is how many people are I think some of them before should say it means how many people proportionally are in the house. In other words, it doesn't go lefi psachim would mean you just go according to the number of doors of the house. You don't go by that, but you do go according to how much space there is, right? Yes.
Yeah. So the number of people it means really the amount of space, the amount of beds.
I think that's how there's,
that's
what
it seems to me.
Okay. Tanya Nami Hachi, Devil Shabbat is Chalakas. Similarly, we learn a Braisa that says just that. The dung in the Chatzu is divided up according to the doors. Achsanya lefi bnei Adam, and Achsanya is divided up according to the number of people who live in the house. Here's another thing.
Today would think that you really don't need the dam and you don't need all these things.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Another din. Omer Avona. Echad b'mnei mavish abikish listem k'neged pischay. Suppose one of the people who has his chatzor opening out to the mavri, suppose he wants to close up the area in front of his door. So what does that mean? So there's a few different explanations. Okay. So Rashi explains it means like this. Again, we're going back to his four amma parking space that we talked about yesterday. Now he wants to say, up until now, fine, I have the ability to use it whenever I bring my donkey and unload it. Now I want to put a wall around it so nobody else can use it. Does he have the ability to do that? Tosfos asks on that because you only find he has four amas in the chotzer, not in the mavri. So Tosfos gives a different explanation. Suppose you have, imagine...
He's talking about the mavri.
Right, exactly. That's Tosfos' question. So Tosfos rather explains like this. Let's say, for example, let's imagine that this is the mavri over here. Let's say it's a mavri sasum. One end of it is open to Rishos Rabim, the other end of the other three sides are closed up with chaseris. Suppose you have one guy who lives here near the closed end. So now what he wants to do is he figures like this. Look, everybody else, they don't have any business in this part of the mavri anyway. They walk from their chaser out to the street and back. They don't use this part anyway. So I want to block it all. Does he have the ability to do that? So Rav Huna says, "B'nei Mavri Ma'ak Minolo." The other members of the Mavri can prevent him. Shemar Ba'alein Asaderech because he's causing them to go. He's causing them a longer journey. So what does that mean? Rashi says it means. Okay, so Rashi says it means. So again, according to Rashi, that it means he's blocking off his area over here. Means, for example, like this before they could walk like this, and now they have to walk around. According to Tosfos, that it means he wants to block off his end over here. It means that. When people from Rishus Adabim come into the Mavri, as we will learn in a few lines in the Gemara, very often they do that when it's very crowded in Rishus Adabim, like this, they could spread themselves out more evenly around the Mavri. If he blocks off this end, there's less room for them to spread around in. They're going to start crowding more into the Mavri and maybe even into their Chaser. Therefore, they have the ability to prevent him from doing
it. But it doesn't answer the lack of...
That's the thing. Tosfos explains, Marbel and Tadarach doesn't mean necessarily making the distance longer. It means that he's making more foot traffic in that area. He's making more foot traffic outside of the area that he blocked off.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. There's a few other explanations also, for example, that Rambam explains a little bit like
that. Doesn't mean length, but it means
increase
the amount of footprint.
Yeah. And there's other explanations also that Amman, for example, explains a little bit like Rashi, that we're talking about blocking off his parking area, but not so much building a wall around it, like Rashi said, but rather like building a ledge over there to be able to unload on. Same problem, though. People have to go around the ledge. Okay. The Gemara says, Macy, I have a contradiction to what Rav Huna is saying. We learn in a Braisa. Suppose you have five, or any number, that's five is the typical indefinite number that it uses in the Gemara. You have five chatzeres that are opened out into a mavri. All of them can use the space opposite the outer one. In other words, if this is the mavri, and you have chatzer one, two, three, four, five, so this one, the one closest to the outside, has this area which is sort of his section of the mavri in the sense that he uses it the most, but everybody else has the right to use it also because they all pass through over there. And the outer one can also use that one. And the outer one can use its area as well. Similarly, when it comes to the second one, everybody else can use his area, the area opposite his chaser, his part of the mavui. The second one can use that one as well as the outer one. But in other words, the outer one can't, because the outer one, what business does he have going back there, really, unless he's visiting somebody in one of the other chaseres? He has no business going back here because he lives over here. So it comes out in the end, the one furthest away from the street uses its area as well as everybody else's. But it sounds like nobody else is going to be using this area, because only the one who has the innermost cluster is going to be using it. Why shouldn't he be able to block it all? That contradicts your opponent. The answer is Tanur.
That actually makes Tosfos sound better.
That's part of what Tosfos uses as their proof, yeah. But according to Rashi, also, it also works out, because if we're talking about that, for example, he wants to block off his four armors, fine. What? How does it make them have to walk any longer? Yeah, it works out according to you. Okay. The answer is Tanoi. It's actually Machloitis Tanoi. So when Rav Huna is saying his Shita, he can be saying according to one Tana. The Tanya, as we learn in the Braisa, Echad Mimnei Mavoi Shabikash Lahach the Pis for the Mavoi Acher. Suppose one of the members of a Mavoi wants to move his doorway to a different Mavoi, like we learned before. Bnei Mavoi Ma'akrinola. We said the Bnei Mavoi can prevent him, which, by the way, means, you know, the Gemara could have used that as a proof for what Rav Ami was saying before when he answered that. But okay, not always does the Gemara do that. Not always. When we have an answer from an Amora, we don't always have to find a Braisa as a proof to it. But so, yeah, incidentally, it does prove that. But the Braisa continues. What about if it was the other way around? Let's say, for example, this guy originally had a door opening out to that other Mavri, and he closed it up at some point. Now he wants to reopen it and start using it again. Then the members of the Mavri cannot prevent him. That's what Rebbe says. And then the Braisa continues.
Reopening the door.
What? Reopening the door, right. Right. Now, that's not the point. That's not where we're bringing this Braisa. We're going to deal with that matter in a minute. But first, we're going to deal with the Braisa in order to deal with Rav Huna's statement about closing up the area in front of his door, according to Rashi or Tosfos or the Rambam or whatever. Yeah. So then the Braisa continues. Rav Shimon Amar Zoymer, Chamesh Chatzeres Apsuchas L'Mavri. If you have five Chatzeres that are opened up into one Mavri, call them Mishtamshes B'Mavri Zuim Zu. All of them can use each other's area in the Mavri.
So, including the four armors?
In other words, they can pass through the four armors, but in other words, the point is, unlike what we were saying before, we were assuming before, for example, that you have chaser 1, 2, 3, etc., that, for example, the guy who lives in the middle over here can only use the areas of the Mavri from here on out, because he has no business going into here unless he's visiting somebody in one of those other chaseres. Now Rav Shimon Elazar is saying not like that.
He can use this part as well.
Exactly. So the question is, before we see how that works according to Rav Huna, we have to ask Chaseres Man D'Chashmayu. Where did the Braisa ever say? Where did Rebbe say anything about Chaseres that Rav Shimon Elazar is arguing? We have the general rule in Shas that when it says Omar somebody, it means he's making a new independent statement. But when he says somebody Oimer, it means he's arguing with a previous statement. Here it's Rav Shimon Elazar Oimer. What is he arguing with? Rebbe didn't say anything different. And the answer is Chasuri Masra. The Braita is missing words. It means to say like this. So also Rebbe would say by the same logic that if you have five chaseres opening out to a mavui, that each one can only use from their area and further out, but not further in. That would be Rebbe, Divi Rebbe. Reb Shimon Elazar, I'm a chamash chaseres. So for mavui, kol b'shamshes b'mavui, whereas Reb Shimon Elazar would disagree. Therefore, Reb Huna, who is saying that, for example, me living over here, cannot block off my four amas or block off my end of the chaser or whatever, that would be a point to Reb Shimon Elazar. So not necessarily can you contradict him from this braisa. The actual halacha, though, most poskim say the actual halacha would be like Rebbe. We have a general rule called halacha to Rebbe mechaveroi, that if Rebbe disagrees with one individual tana, the halacha is like him. So therefore, it's considered, so therefore we would say that no. So for example, let's say, using for example, Tosfos' scenario, the one person who's living in a chatzah over here is perfectly entitled to block off this area over here. The other people can't argue ma'abra'ala and
etc.
Because they don't have the right to use that area anyway. Yeah. Okay, Omar, now getting back to another point we said in the Braisa, how you saw some of Bikr's Lepaiskai, we said that if a person had a door open to another Mavri, and he closed it, and now he wants to reopen it, and B'nai Mavri Ma'akhtanala, then the members of that Mavri can't prevent him. Again, are we talking about his original Mavri, his new Mavri, whatever, that's subject to that Machlokas Rishonim from before. Amar Rava, so Rava says it actually depends. Loishanu elashalek paras es tatzimam. This only applies if, when he closed up the door, he did not take down the door frame. So he bricked up the door, but he left the door frame in place, which shows, therefore, that he's only closing it. It's not necessarily a permanent thing. He's closing it up temporarily. He may exercise the option to open it again in the future. But if he took down the door frame and rebuilt it as a solid wall, then it shows that he was moichel on his full amos or whatever it is, and therefore or on his ability to have anything to do with the mavi, and therefore the bnei mavi can prevent it. Amalei Abaye l'Rava, Abaye says to Rava, Tanya de Messiah Lach. As a matter of fact, I can find a braisa that proves your point. The braisa says, Bayis sosum yesh ledal ramas. If you have a sealed up house, meaning so you had a chotzer, you had a door open into a chotzer, and then you closed up that door, yesh ledal ramas. You're entitled, if the chotzer ever gets divided, you're still entitled to your four amah parking area because the door may well be open. But if you took down the door frame, aim ledaladamas, then you lose that daladamas. So it shows that you're
mokal.
Rashi says the mashkif and the mezuzas, yeah. And the mifton, actually, also Rashi says the threshold. Yeah, the door has things on all four sides, right? So if you took all that away, then it shows that you're not planning to.
You're leaving it as an open hole, or you would be closing that?
No. The person, when he was closing it up, he took down all those things on all four sides of the door, and then he bricked the whole thing up.
So either he bricked it up inside these
within the door frames and whatever.
Or he bricked it up, or he like totally took it apart, made it like a fresh wall.
No, it doesn't have to be a fresh wall. No, it can be like, for example, you can see, for example, sometimes in some of the abandoned buildings around Brooklyn, sometimes you have a doorway which there's no frame over there, but you can clearly tell that there was a door, but there's no actual door frame there, right? There's no wooden pieces or whatever around. Yeah.
So they lose their rights, these
right.
people.
Another din, although Marshall takes out this one, kever shpitzchei sosim ena metame kol tzviva, a kever that has a closed up door is not metame all the area around it, only in front of the door. Parat tzvatzima v'sosim ena metame kol tzviva, but if you took down the door frame and closed it up, then it's metame all the area around it. Marshall takes that out because basically it's the same thing as the next din, which is bayis sosim ena metame kol tzviva. If you have a sealed up house, the door is bricked up, let's say, and there's a mess inside the house. Eina matame kol svivav, it's not matame all the area around it. Only the area in front of the door. We have a concept in Hilchos Tumah Vatara called soif tumah lotzeis. You have the din, or we've had it in
it with Trump.
We learned it in Bay. Was it in Bay? I don't remember. But there is a concept like this. You have a mess in a house. That mess presumably is not going to stay there forever. Eventually, it's going to be taken out. So therefore, if you have a door or window or whatever, which is it's expected that the mess is going to be taken out through that one, then the area under that door frame is metame even now, even while the mess is in the house. I think it's midrabanan, yes. But so like this, even though the door is sealed up, nevertheless, it's still metame only in that area because you expect eventually you're going to take down the bricks and take out the mess through there. On the other hand, paratz tzatzimov, but if you broke down the door frame and then bricked it up, then it's like a kever sosum, then it's like the previous din, metame kol tzvivav, and then it's metame all the area around it. What does it mean, all the area around it? Rashi learns it means four amos around the house. The reason is because what happens, for example, somebody who's working with things that are supposed to be tahor, like truma or whatever, may come too close to the house. They'll end up overshadowing the house and becoming tameh. And they won't realize. Therefore, the Chachamim prevented them from coming within four amos of it. Tosfos asks on that because on the face of it, it's a house. It's a defined area. Why should you need four amos around it? So rather, Tosfos explains that, let's say, for example, you have ledges around the house. Now, a ledge, a tefach wide, is enough to bring tumma from one place to another, is enough to transmit tumma from one place to another. So let's say, for example, that you have the sealed door. Now, let's say there's a ledge running around it, running above that door, and then elsewhere around the building. Only that ledge will be only under that ledge will be tame, but not around other ledges on other sides of the house. As opposed to if you took down the door frame and then you bricked up the door, then any ledges around the house will be, if you're under those ledges.
You bricked up all the doors.
No, let's say it only had the one door. But whatever, the point is that originally it only had one door. Originally it only had one door, let's say. You bricked it up without taking down the fatimin.
Yeah.
You have a ledge above that door. which extends, let's say, over that door and then, let's say, a couple of feet on either side. Anything under that ledge will become tame, but not any around any other ledges that might be around the other sides of the house. As opposed to part of the system of any ledge on any side of the house that you go under it, you'll become tame. So the point is, we see that there's a difference between Parach Tzatzim and Nath. Omer Rav Baba Chon Omer Bechman. Here's another din about the entrance from a Chafter to a Mavri. Mavoyas Hamfoloshes Le'ir Acher. It's not really a Chafter so much, just a Mavri. Let's say you have a Mavri which is open, it's open on both sides to streets, to intercity streets. So you have, for example, the Mavri itself is not a Rishus Rabim. But you have, let's say, for example, there's a Rishus Rabim here going from one city to another. There's another one here. In between them, you have a Mavri, which is open on both ends. It's open on one end to one highway and on the other end to the other. Right. Ubikshu bnei ha'ir l'soisma. Now the people of the city want to close it off. They want to close up one end or the other of the Mavri. They want to turn it into a cul-de-sac. They want to turn it into a dead-end street. Bnei oiser ir ma'akben aleihem. The members of those cities, the people who travel on those roads, are able to prevent them from doing that. Because when there's a crowd in Rosh Hashanah, they go into the Mavri like this. You're preventing them from being able to do that.
But why should you allow the crowd to go into a private?
Because we'll see in a second. We'll see in a second.
It's a Mavri.
It's a semi-private area. We'll see in a second. Wait. Now, needless to say, let's say, for example, there's no other way to go through. Let's say, for example, between this road and this road, the only cross street between them, let's say, is this Mavri. Of course they can. Of course they can prevent them, because otherwise they have to go way around. But no, the din is, even if there is another route, even if there is another Mavri of a few blocks down, let's say, that they could use that instead, still, Nami Ma'akri, they can also prevent them. Mishum de Rav Yehuda Omer Rav, because of the din that Rav Yehuda said in the name of Rav, the Omer, which he says, the din as follows, Meitzer Shech Ziku Bo Rabim Oso Lekalkaloi. When you have an area, Meitzer literally means an edge of a field, but sometimes people would use it as a shortcut, which Rabim have made a chazaka on it to be able to use it, you're not allowed to ruin it. You're not allowed to damage it and prevent the people from continuing to use it. In this case, in other words, even though this Mavri, yes, it started out as a semi-private area, it's originally meant only for the members of the individual houses and chaseiras, but because the Rabim have started using it, and they have established, therefore, a chazaka on it, you're not allowed to stop that and prevent them. Now, Tosfos points out, if they want to make such a chazaka, you don't have to allow them. We learned in Bava Kamma, Tosfos quotes from Gemara in Bava Kamma that says, let's say, for example, people want to take a shortcut through your field, you're entitled to sit there with a stick and beat them off.
Right.
But once the shortcut has already been established, and you weren't Moshe, then you can't go back on it. That's what we're talking about over here. The B'nai Mavri were never Moshe, and the B'nai Rosh Hashanah using their Mavri as a shortcut from one highway to another. Therefore, they don't have the ability to go back on that. Kinder Rav Gidol, like Rav Gidol says, again, Marshall takes this out, because it doesn't really belong over here, Jomar Rav Gidol, Rabim Shebeiru Derech Lasman, Mashebeiru Beiru, that's a din that we'll have later on in Onesechtan, of course. There's a concept that once the Rabim have chosen a certain Derech, have chosen a certain path, then they're entitled. And they haven't been prevented, then they're entitled to keep it. Another din, in this connection, Omer of Onan Omer Shmuel, the Voyas Ham Fulosh and the Rishos Rabim, again, you have a Mavri, which is open at both ends to Rishos Rabim, and the members of the Mavri, they don't want to block it off completely like the previous case, make it into a cul-de-sac, but they do want to put up doors
on both sides,
on one side or on both sides. Again, B'nai Rosh Hashanah, and again, the B'nai Rosh Hashanah can prevent them, same idea, because it prevents them from being able to go in there when there's a crowd in Rosh Hashanah.
That's after they have a chazaka, but not before.
There's obviously, yeah. There is, by the way, a good
Mavri.
Not really, because not 16 amos wide and whatever, but yeah. There is, by the way, a good deal.
It still has the issues of Mavri.
We consider it Mavri. Yeah, it would be a Mavri foolish. When it comes to the Dinim of Shabbos, for example, you'd need a Tzuras HaPesach at one end and a Lechi or Purah at the other.
Even
end.
Though the Rabim goes through?
Yeah, because you still don't have 600,000 people going through, and still it's not 16 amos wide, yeah? Yeah. Anyway. There is, by the way, a good deal of discussion among Rishonim what the situation is here. Are we talking about over here that, for example, so are we talking about that the when we say mefulash and rishus rabim, does it mean both ends are open to rishus rabim?
No,
or maybe does it mean one end is open to rishus rabim? Maybe the other end is open to a bika, like a valley or something where there's fields or some such thing. Maybe there'd be differences. Maybe there'd be differences in that regard. Or actually the previous case, for example, we said they can't make it into a dead end, but could they put up doors in that case? Maybe the difference is they could put up doors if, let's say, it's not so much that it's open to two main streets, but rather one end is open to a street and the other end maybe to a bika or something, as opposed to the two ends are open to streets. And yeah, they also talk about the Ramban, I think, talks about, for example, what if there was already a doorway over there? In other words, they put up an actual door frame, they just didn't put doors in it yet. Maybe by putting up a door frame, they demonstrated we don't want the B'nai Rishas Adam to be coming in here. Therefore, at some later date, they have the ability to put up doors.
Is that enough?
That might, according to him, yeah. Okay. So, Sovamina, now they thought to say Hanimila B'dalad Amos, they thought to say the Chachamim, that this din that we're talking about is only that they're not allowed to put the doors within 4 Amos of Rishas Rabim. Kidir Rav Zeira, Amar Rav Nachman, as we find a different din that Rav Zeira said in the name of Rav Nachman, Amar Rav Zeira, Amar Rav Nachman, Dalad Amos Hasmuchus Rishas Rabim Kirshas Rabim Damian, that the 4 Amos closest to Rishas Rabim at the end of a Mavui have to a certain extent the dinim of Rishas Rabim, namely, specifically as far as the dinim of Tumah V'Tahara. There's a concept, we've learned it many times in before, we learned it in Nazir, we learned it here and there in other places, the concept of Sofok Tumah versus Yachad versus Rishas Rabim. If you have a case where you're not sure, if you became Tameh, you're not sure whether you touched something Tameh or what have you, it depends whether it's in Rishas Yachad or Rishas Rabim. In Rishas Rabim, a Sofok is Tahar, in Rishas Yachad is Tameh. The 4 last Amos of a Mavui closest to Rishas Rabim, because B'nai Rishas Rabim are always coming in there, whenever it's crowded in Rishas Rabim, is considered for that purpose like Rishas Rabim. And if there was a Sofok Tumah over there, you'd be tar. So they thought to say that, fine, within those 4 Amos, you can't put up doors, but you can put them in. You could put them 5, 6, whatever Amos away. No. The Lohi, but actually
five,
that's not.
Amos away
from the street. So if this is the street over here, and this is the Mavui, so we thought to say you can't put the doors too close to Rishas Rabim, but if you want to put doors over here, let's say you'd be allowed to. Lohi, but that's not it. Hasam le'in and Tumah, there is a matter of Tumah v'Tahara, we say only 4 Amos. Aval Hacha, but when it comes to the actual fact that the B'nai Rishas Rabim sometimes use this area as an overflow area, Zimna d'zachki B'nai Rishas Rabim ba'ayli Tumah. Sometimes when there's a lot of a huge crowd in Rishas Rabim, sometimes they may go way much further into the Mavui. And therefore you can't put up doors. So again,
what is it? So all the areas that they go in is tar?
No, they still say only the 4 Amos, because that's the main area that they go into. But the fact of the matter is, they do have rights to be able to go even further into the Mavui, and therefore, according to some Rishonim, this is only talking about Dapur with open at both ends of Rishas Rabim, not necessarily where one end of it is closed, or one end of it goes out to a bika or whatever. Anyway, okay. All right. Now, going back to the Mishnah, we said in the Mishnah, V'loya Sasada, that when it comes to two people own a field jointly and now they want to divide it, we say one of them cannot force the other one to divide it, unless there's at least 9 kavim of area in the field for each one of them. Now, the area we can plant 9 kavim, and then we had Rabbi Yehuda arguing and saying that, no, not 9 kavim, but 4.5 kavim. This is loyally, they're actually not arguing. Ma'uki Asri or Ma'uki Asri, each one goes according to his respective place. In Rabbi Yehuda's area, the ground was much more fertile. Therefore, even 4.5 kavim is worth taking care of. It can be called a field. Whereas in the Tana Kama's place, you need a 9 kavim. As I said yesterday, Mephoshim also argued when we have in the Mishnah, Rabbi Akiva has a similar argument with the Tana Kama about the size of a garden, where he says half the size of the Tana Kama. Is it the same kind of thing? It depends on the quality of the soil, or maybe Rabbi Akiva holds as a, it doesn't matter.
What is it?
Different opinions. Later on in the Masechta, we have a Mishnah that mentions, in a different connection, that mentions a chassi kav and a coin to Rabbi Akiva, based on Rabbi, which implies that Rabbi Akiva apparently is arguing always.
So for him, it's always,
at least in the case of a garden, at least he would hold it. But Bobo Mai. Now, the question is, all this is in Eretz Yisrael, where the ground is good quality. What about in Bobo, where the ground is not such good quality? It's not really worth taking care of a field that's only 9 kavim worth. Nobody would bother.
Right.
What's considered the amount that's considered a big enough field that...
9
kav. So a base kav is what? A base kav is an area about 20 by 20 amos, if I remember correctly. 30 by 30 feet, roughly. So nine times that. You're not talking a particularly large
area. And base of time is how much?
Base of time is 5,000 square amos.
Much bigger.
So they saw So base star is 2,500 square amas. Yeah, so base star is 2,500 square amas. A base cap, a cap being 1/6 of a sa, is about 400 square amas. Yeah. So 9 times that, you're talking about 3,600. You're talking about 3,700
yeah.
square amas, according to the Tanakhama, and half that according to the
Tanakhama.
Base cab is a base cab is about 400 square amas.
400 square amas.
Yeah.
And a bit and base sa.
A base sa is six times that. It's about 2,500 square amas. Okay. So, but Bava Mai, what about in Bava where the soil was not of such a good quality? Amar Rav Yosef Bei Radu Yoma. In that case, then the amount that it would normally take you one day to plow. Because the idea is usually for the plowing season, you're not necessarily going to have your own animals and workers and whatever. You're probably going to hire them. If you have less than a day's worth of work, it's not worth bothering. Because what are you going to do? You're going to pay them for a few hours of the day, and then what are they going to do? Nobody's going to want to take such a job. So problem is my bay rodu yoma. The problem with that is there's different kinds of plowing different times of the year. So which kind do we mean? E-yoma zara, are we talking about the kind of plowing that you do at the time of the planting, which is at that point already the ground is softer, because usually what you have is you plow, and later on, sometime later, is the planting season. So by the time it comes to the planting season, the ground is much softer. So if you're talking about the amount that it takes a day to plow during the planting season, it's going to take more than one day to plow that same thing at the plowing season, earlier in the season when the ground is harder, but it's not going to take two full days. Your bike is going to have the problem. You're going to have a day and a half worth of work, and you're not going to be able to find workers for the second day. E yoma karba, and if you're talking about during the plowing season, that's enough to do one full day of plowing. Yoma dezara lahabi, then it'll take less than a day to plow it when it comes to the planting season. So what are you talking about? One day's worth of planting, no matter what, however you work it out, you're going to have either too much or too little of the other season. The answer is Ibarisema Yoma de Karba. You could answer either way. You could answer that you're talking about you go according to one day during the plowing season. And what you do is de Karev Vatonim. What you do is, in that case, the assumption is that if a person has a piece of land that size, yes, it'll take a day and a half to do the initial plowing because the ground is hard, but then you'll have to soften the ground. But then what you'll do is you'll do a double plowing. You'll hire workers like this. You'll tell the workers, I'm hiring you for 2 days. During that 2 days, I expect you to plow the ground twice over. The first time, it'll take a day and a half. The second time, since the ground is now very soft, you'll be able to finish the rest of it in the remaining part of the day. And then that works. And then when it comes to the planting season, and you plow over there also after you planted the seeds, you plow again to cover them up with dirt. Then it'll take one full day to do that. So then you have full days anyway. Or I could answer you, we're talking about the kind of place where it takes one day to plow during the planting season. What are you going to do during the plowing season when it takes a day and a half? The answer is, Bahaduri. You have to be talking about, let's say we're talking about a tougher ground. Let's say there's ups and downs in it. So therefore, it doesn't take only one day. In that case, the initial plowing during the karva season, during the initial plowing season, will take two full days as opposed to a day and a half. Then when it comes to the planting season and you're having to cover the planted seeds, then it'll take one day. But either way, you'll have full days. Okay, Rashi brings another girsa over here, which he prefers the second one, which is what we just learned. But the other girsa has it the other way around. That if you're going to say it's talking about a place where you go according to a day of plowing during the planting season, but we're talking about that what you do is during the plowing season you would plow twice, so therefore you're gonna have 2 days, and then during the planting season you'd have one. Okay. So it works out. You have full days either way. Okay. Next question is davla. What about if you have davla? Literally means bucket. It means literally means bucket. The Rashi explains it means if you have a water pit, a water hole, which you use for watering a field, and you have two people who have inherited it or whatever, and now they want to divide it, how large does it need to be in order for it to be subject to division, dividable? Many other Rishonim learn, Tosfos quotes, and many other, the Rambam also learned this way, that it means rather we're talking about the kind of land which needs to be watered with buckets. So then the question is, how large does that have to be in order for it to be dividable? And the answer is, Amar Rav Nachman, be'dolu yoyla, enough to be able to water for one day. So according to Rashi, it means the pit has to be large enough that there's enough water supply in there that one person could use it for his watering needs for one day, and the other can also. According to Tosfos, it would mean that it's large enough that it would take one day to water the whole thing. Paudasa, what about a vineyard? That's the halacha. Paudasa, what about a vineyard? How large does it have to be dividable? Amar Abu Dishmo bas shloshes kabin. That there it has to be the size of three kabin. A kab being 1/6 of a saw. So in terms of size, it would be then, as we said, one cab is 400 square amos. So you're talking 1,200 square amos. So that's what Rashi said. Now, the point is that this way you have each one. If you look at it like the chotzer of the Mishkan, which is two saw, and you divide it, then I'm not real sure what Rashi means by that, because two saw is 12 cabins. So I'm not sure what Rashi means, how you divide that down and get three cabins for each one. I don't know. We learned similarly in Braisa. If one person says to the other, I'm selling you a portion of a vineyard without specifying an amount, Sumchos says it should be not less than three kabin. Less than that can't be considered a vineyard. However, Rabbi Yossi says these are only words of nevuah, meaning there's no logical reason behind them. There's no logical reason to say that you should say specifically three cabins. So again, this is an Eretz Yisrael. Now, so far we had a regular field. We distinguish between Eretz Yisrael and Gavol. A water pit according to Rashi, or a field that needs to be watered according to Tosfos, we didn't distinguish because the rule is the same in Eretz Yisrael and Gavol. Either way, it's enough that you can have watering for one day. When it comes to a vineyard, again, Eretz Yisrael is not necessarily the same as Babel, as far as the soil and as far as the climate or whatever. So what's the amount of Babel? Amar Rava Bar Kasna, plus Atziyasa B'nei Tireta Gupni. It has to be at least three rows, each of which contains 12 vines. Kiheche Derofet Gavra B'yoma, because that's enough that it would take one person to hoe, to dig around the roots of the vine. It would take him one day to do that.
Three rows of 12 each.
So 36 vines. 12 vines.
Meaning, what's a vine?
A vine, an individual vine. So in other words, you have 36 vines altogether. That is the amount of space that would take the average person one day to work on. And again, that way that's considered dividable, because then that way a person would hire a worker to work for an entire day digging around the roots of them to aerate the roots or whatever.
36,
right.
Oh, I forgot. Why are we talking about dividable?
Because that's the subject of the Mishnah, that if you have two people own a field, for example, jointly, or a chotzer, or any of these things, how large does it have to be before one of them can force the other one to divide it?
Oh, and they can actually force it if it's that.
Yeah, if it's less than that, we send the Mishnah. That's mutually agreed. Although, we'll talk about later on Dr. Gimel, does one of them have the ability to say, either I buy out your portion or you buy out my portion? That's good or you're good. We'll get to that later. Now a little bit of a gadda. Since we have Rabbi Yossi saying about Sumchot, the statement, that this is just like words of Nebuah without a reason behind it, without a logical reason behind it.
You're referring to what?
He's saying what Sumchot said. This is what you're saying. Sweet carbon. Where are you getting sweet carbon from?
But what do you say it's words of Nebuah?
It's a way of saying, in other words, like where did you get it from? It's like as if you had it by Nebuah
he
pulled it out of the air, but like as if
doesn't
it came to
you.
Yeah, in other words, it's as if it just came to you just like that without...
It's derogatory.
Tosfos says that specifically. You're saying it without a reason behind it. Like
it's
like
pulling it out of the air.
Now we're going to talk a little bit about Nevuah. Omer of Abdimi Odomin Chaifa, Miyom Shachara Beis Mikdash, since the Beis Mikdash was destroyed, Nitla Nevuah min Nevi'im min Nitla Chachamim. Nevuah was taken away from the Nevi'im and given to the Chachamim.
Mm-hmm.
So what does that mean? So first of all, the question, auto chocham lav navi hu. So what do you mean? A chocham can't be a navi, just the opposite. A navi, one of the criteria for a navi is that he has to be a chocham. In other words, what are you saying? It was taken away from the Nevi'im and given to the Chachamim as though there are two different groups of people. The Nevi'im themselves are Chachamim.
They were Chachamim?
Yeah. One of the criteria to be a Navi is that you're going to be a Chacham. The answer is no. Chachakama, what it means is that it's Achapisha Nitla Min HaNevi'im, even though it was taken away from the Nevi'im, Min HaChachamim Lo Nitla. It was not taken away from the Chachamim. The Chachamim, in other words, still have a certain degree of Nevu'ah. Chachamim meaning the Chachamim and Chachamim. Does it apply to an average run-of-the-mill person who learns Torah? I don't know.
Does it apply to our generation?
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. It's a certain level of nevuah. Amar Amema v'chacham adif minavi. As a matter of fact, Amema says, in a certain sense, a chacham is greater than a navi. In Tanya, in Igeres HaKodesh, your test, it talks about this, that, for example, it describes over there how the Arizal explains that Moshe Rabbeinu's revelation of a lakus only went as far as the lower level of Netzach Hod Yesod and Malchus,
right,
or whatever, whereas you have the Mekubalim, the Arizal, and all the other Mekubalim talk about much higher levels than that. They talk about all the way up to Kesser, all the way beyond, the Lifnei Simtzum, and whatever. Why is it? Because there's a difference between Moshe Rabbeinu sees. He's seeing V'ro'isa Tachore. He sees some level of a lakus. So all he can see is the lowest level. A Chacham doesn't see with his eyes, but he understands with his brain. To be able to understand, it's called Metzius versus Mahus in Chassidish terminology. You have Metzius is you know that something exists, but you can't actually describe the shape or whatever of it. Mahus is you can describe what it actually is. Moshe Rabbeinu is able to see Moshe Rabbeinu is able to see the Mahus of the Eivishter to a certain extent. As opposed to the Mekubalim are able to understand there is a Metzius. We know that there is such a thing as Kesir. We know there is such a thing as Lifnei and Lacha, Tzimtzum and Shvira Sakelim and this and that and the other. They don't actually see it with their eyes, but they can understand it with their brain. And in that sense, the Chacham is greater than the Navi. The Chacham's Hasaga is able to go higher than, is able to reach higher places than
the Navi. Well, the Rizal sees the difference than us when we read it in scripture.
Right, well, yeah, of course, but still.
It will kind of be, if we could see what he saw, it kind of be almost like seeing with our eyes.
Yeah.
Lashon of Yechezkel is, I see,
right?
Fine.
He also, he saw,
he was enough.
But his Nebuah is still on a lower level even than Moshe. Moshe is the highest of all Nebuah.
Is he the only one who said, I see?
No. Yeshai also says,
yeah.
A bunch of Nebuah.
Yeah.
Okay. Anyway, there's a lot of different other explanations about this Chacham Adif Minavi. One other interesting one, the Ran says in one of his drashas, the difference is a Navi can only say exactly what Hashem told him. A Chacham can come up with new ideas in Torah of his own. They have to be based on Torah, of course, but they can come up with new concepts in Torah on his own. Okay. Shenemar, you have a pasuk that says, V'Navi Lavav Chachma. The simple meaning of V'Navi Lavav means we should bring ourselves to have a heart of Chacham. But the Gemara is understanding Navi as a noun. A Navi has a heart of wisdom. Meaning, me nitla b'mi. Now, when you're comparing one thing to the other, what do you compare? You compare the smaller to the great one. Have I ever come in nitla b'gado? So if you're saying the Navi has a heart of Chachma, that goes to show that Chachma is greater than Nevuah. Amar Abaya, Teda, you can see this. You can prove this, that a Chacham has a certain degree of Nevuah. The Amar Gavra Rabba Milsa, because sometimes you can have a great Tamad Chacham says a certain vort in Torah, and you find later on that another great Talmud Chacham said exactly the same thing. How did they both hit on the same idea? Nevuah, a certain degree of Nevuah.
Through the Nevuah
that is within their Chacham.
That story about the simple Jew that learned the Rambam and this big Talmud Chacham.
That was a different thing. Yeah, he opened up the thing because the Talmud Chacham opened up the sinner. Yeah,
you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
It seems from the discussion that one degree of Nevoah goes through Chachma and the other degree of Nevoah is way beyond Chachma, seemingly.
Of course. So we're saying, ultimately, Nevoah was taken away from the Nevi'im. We're saying the kind, again, we're putting it in the terms out that Eber says over there in Geras HaKodesh, the kind of Nevoah we can see Elikos is gone. But the kind where Talmud Chacham can perceive Elikos, that still exists. Yeah.
It's like, you can't go to the museum anymore, but I'll tell you all about it.
Yeah, okay. Amar Rava. Okay. Amar Rava. So Rava says, though, my Kusha, why do you have such a problem with that one person could hit on the same thing as somebody else? Maybe they both have the same mazel. They both have the same root of the neshama. And therefore, they both get from the same place in Lamaila. No, I can prove it in a different way. So you can have that a great Talmud Chacham says something, and you have it turns out that Rabbi Akiva said the same thing as him. He's obviously not from the same mazel. Rabbi Akiva, Rashi says, is a much greater chacham. Also, my Rabbi Gershom says another meaning of Bnei Mazla is that we're both born at the same time. And of course, Rabbi Akiva lived long before. Rabbi Rava is living hundreds of years later.
That's the Rabbi Akiva that we all know.
So therefore, you see that there's a kind of thing where a chacham has a certain degree of nevuah. Still, Omer of Asher, you might.
What's so special?
The fact that he hits on independently on the same idea that Rabbi Akiva hit on.
Maybe he knew what Rabbi Akiva.
No, he knew. Obviously, there was plagiarism. We're not talking. Because he's a Gavur Rabbi, he's a great Talmud Chacham. We're not accusing him of plagiarism. He thought of the idea, and it turns out independently that hundreds of years ago, Rabbi Akiva. You have throughout Shas, you have all the time that an Amora says something. Tanya Kaba say the pointy, and we have the same din in a Braita. Rav Ashi says, "My kusha, why do you find that so hard to understand?" Maybe fine. He's not generally speaking Rav Akiva's mazel. Rav Akiva is on a completely different level than him. But maybe for this purpose, maybe this particular detail, they have the same root of their neshama. Ella Amar Rav Ashi, Teda. No, I'll prove it in a different way. Amar Gavur Rabbi Milsa. You can have sometimes a Talmud Chacham says something, or Misamra Halacha L'Moshe Mitzinai Kavah say, and you have the same thing. It turns out it was said as Halacha L'Moshe Mitzinai. There, it's not a matter of Mazel. Halacha L'Moshe Mitzinai is something that was given directly by the Eivishter to Moshe. He's not Ben Mazel with the Eivishter. So therefore, obviously, yeah.
Is this kind of like in Tanya where it says that the ruach of a tzaddik will go and be on your neshama? To give you a
boost. I don't think it's really related, particularly. Maybe, I don't know.
Okay.
So the question is, who says he actually got it through Nevuah? Maybe it's just he happened to hit on it. Just like, you're a blind person moving away, feeling around in a skylight. Eventually he'll find the opening. Or like, in English they have an expression, a blind squirrel will find a nut occasionally, So maybe it punk happens, he accidentally hit on something. Who says it's Nevuah? The answer is Vlav Tam Yahu. Okay, but after all, this person who's saying this Zvart or this Din or whatever, he's giving a logical reason for it. You can't say he just punk happened to hit on it. It must be that he received a certain degree of Nevuah through his Chachma, and therefore he was able to come up with this idea.
Because
the logic that he's giving, so we see he's not just randomly going around and then finding something. Here's another thing about Nevuah. From the day the Beit HaMikdash was destroyed, Nevuah has been taken away from the Nevi'im and given to fools and to children. So again, there's a lot of different explanations on that. Marshall says maybe it obviously doesn't mean that they get Nevuah, they don't get true Nevuah, of course. They don't get it from Tzadik Kedusha. He says maybe they get it through the clippers. Like it comes down and the only thing that
children.
Not that they're bad. We're not talking that they're bad children, but they can receive things that adults can't, for example.
When you dream,
you have less seichel. You have less seichel to stand in the way. The Maharal talks about this in a number of places. He says, for example, you find, let's say that you find it even in earlier times. You find, for example, Bilam's donkey was able to see the Malach. Bilam himself wasn't, because the donkey has no seichel to interfere with a sort of, so to speak, a clearer reception. There's a lot of other explanations also, including one interesting one I once saw is because an adult, if he were to receive a message from Hashem to give to somebody else, and it was less than complimentary or whatever, the person would probably, hold it back or make it sound better or whatever. With kids and shoytim have no filter like that. Whatever they think. So therefore, what you get from them is a true reflection of what the Eibishter implanted into their brain.
Truth is spoken in the mouth of children.
Yeah. So, l'shoytim nayhi, where do you see an example where a shoyta has a degree of nevuah? He had the Ma'abar Rav Ashi, as we have the example of the case of Ma'abar Rav Ashi, to have a
code. By the way, do you know of any Nevuah from children or from shoytim?
Listen. You're asking, and the Gemara is in the middle of trying to answer it. L'shoytim ma'i, he had the Ma'abar Rav Ashi, have a code beristika de Mechuza. One time, Ma'abar Rav Ashi was standing in the main street of Mechuza. Shamela, who shoyted the Kamar, and he overheard a shoyter saying, "Resh mesifted the Molech b'masa machasya tavyomi chotim." The new Rosh Yeshiva who is going to be taking office in Masa Machasya, which is far away from Mechuza, signs his name as Tavyumi. Omar, so Ma'abar Rav Ashi thinks to himself, "Man chotim Tavyumi b'Rabbanon? Who among the Rabbanon signs his name Tavyumi? I know that is me." So either it means some Mefarshim learn, that it means throughout Shas we call him Mar Barav Ashi, but that was a title of respect. Mar means our Rebbe. Doesn't mean his first name wasn't Mar. His first name, according to this, was Tavyumi. But they called him Mar out of respect, our Rebbe, the son of Rav Ashi. But his actual signature was Tavyumi.
What does it mean, Tavyumi?
So Marshal brings from Sefer Yochanan that he was called Tavyumi because in his days, the Jewish people in Babel still had it good. It was basically their last period of peace before Tov Yomi. It was the last period of peaceful times before the government there started getting anti-Semitic, and there were many years of troubles over there.
What generation is
Margaret Rav Ashi? Is the generation after Rav Ashi. We're talking there in the mid-5th century.
Like the sixth generation.
So you're talking. This is the seventh, eighth. This is Rav Ashi is the sixth generation.
Right, so
this is the seventh generation. But for example,
that's the end of the Gemara.
It's basically the end of the Gemara. But for example, one of the kings of Persia at that time was named Izgadar. The Gemara mentions a different Izgadar in one or two places. This is a different one. This is the second one. At the end of his reign, we find, Rav Shura writes in his Igeret, that he started passing various Gzeres. In particular, Rav Shura describes over there, it's also brought various other things from the guy named, this is Gader, Yezdegur, whatever his real name was, he made a Gzera that you're not allowed to say Shema. This was at the very end of Mahabur Rav Ashi's life. So therefore, most of his life was good times. But anyway, Rav Shura goes on to tell that the Chachamim Davin for Rahmanus from the Eberster, a snake or a tannin, whatever, some kind of large scaly creature came and swallowed up this Izgadar in his bedroom,
wow.
And the Gzeira was bottled. It's interesting. The Gaonim bring a fascinating thing based on this. Have you ever wondered why it is that we say Shema in the middle of Kedusha of Musaf on Shabbos and Yom Tov? In the middle of it, all of a sudden, and we say Hu Elokeinu, and we finish off with the last words, Ani Hashem Elokeinu, the last three words of Shema. The Gaonim say, a number of the Gaonim say in their Chovas, this also comes from that story. When they made this gzeira, so it's too dangerous to say Shema during this time in the shul, they have guards watching out for it. So what they did is the Chachamim of that time, such as Ma'abar Avashi or the other Chachamim of that time, made a takana that you should say at least just the first pasuk and the last words of it in Kedusha over there, and put it over there at Tefillah, who Yashienu v'Yigalenu Sheinis, they should take us out of Golos and save us from such gzeiras. And then, so even after Yizgadar was killed by the snake or whatever it is, they still kept it in Kedusha as a memory, as a remembrance of that net, of how we were saved from that Zera.
But how would they, why put it, I mean, could they say it
in Kedusha, you can add, you have piyutim in Kedusha that are added.
Going in mind?
By that time, they'd already left. They knew that you're supposed to say Shema about 3 hours of the day, and so they didn't catch on. So that's the point. So they kept it in afterwards as a Zera of this net.
So what people were just saying Shema maybe at their house before they go to shul.
Maybe also, yeah, but at least in shul, yeah.
While you're walking, you can just go in Shema.
Right, that's true. Anyway, Rabbi Gershon gives a different explanation of Tavyumi. He explains that it means that Tavyumi was their family name. In other words, Rabbi Rav Ashi is saying to himself that I signed as Tavyumi, my father before me signed as Tavyumi. Anyway, okay. So, Shmami no the Didi Kaima Lishaita. So, Ma'abar Rav Ashi thinks to himself, obviously, it must mean me. It must mean I have Mazel right now. It's my Mazel to time. I had better get to Masa Machasya and I will become the Rosh Hashiva over there. Mind you, his father, Rav Ashi, had been the Rosh Hashiva in Masa Machasya years before that. Why didn't they appoint Ma'abar Rav Ashi? The Chassam Sofer and a number of other Achronim say, you see from this, that we do say that a position goes usually by Yerusha from father to son, but only a position of authority, not a position of Torah. Being the Rosh Hashiva is a position of Torah. That does not necessarily go to the son if there are better qualified people ahead of him.
As evidence here, yeah.
So, come also. So he got up and went to Masa Machasya. Ada also, by the time he got there, in the Rabbanon, had voted that they were going to make Rav Achmi Difti as the new Rosh Hashiva. Given to Shami da also, but when they heard that Ma'abar Rav Ashi had come to town, a chosh of a gast in town, so they sent two Talmid Chachamim to him to ask for his advice. We decided locally over here that Rav Acha would be the good candidate. What do you say? Akve, or Akvuhu, whatever, he kept them back. Akvinu Gabe, he kept them by him. They came to ask advice. He said, sit over here, wait, I'll answer you soon. They sent another pair, again he held them back, until they had a full minion over there. Kivin Molubayasara, once there was a minion there, Pasahu Vatana Vajarash, then he started giving a drasha, and thereby became the official Rosh Hashiva. Lafishen, Poschen, Bakala, Pasahu Vatana.
Drasha, you become the
Tzela. Sort of like if you think about it, it's now on the cusp of Yud Shvat. How did the Rebbe show that he's becoming the new Rebbe? By saying a minor. This is a similar kind of thing. The new Rosh Hashiva would show that he became the new Rosh Hashiva by giving the official drasha. So now that he has a minion over there, he did that. Lafishen, Poschen, Bakala, Pasahu Vatana. Because you can't do that kind of drasha with less than a minion. So therefore, we had to wait till he had a minion over there. And thereby, he became the Rosh Hashiva.
The Nevor was correct.
Korer of Acha Nafshe, sort of Acha afterwards, finding out that he had been outflanked. He said, and by the way, I did see an explanation. Now, what is it? So Rav Ravashi has the right to take that away from Rav Acha. One answer is that maybe he didn't even realize until the first two Chachamim came to him, he didn't even realize that they're planning that they officially voted to make Rav Acha the new Rosh Hashiva. They may have come and asked him, you know, we're looking around for a new Rosh Hashiva, we're thinking of Rav Acha, what do you say? No, but not necessarily did he know that he already voted on it. In other words, if he had, he might not have done this. But so,
the story tells you what we know it, and he doesn't know it.
Exactly, maybe.
Right. So, this goes with what we learned a little while ago in Bava Metzia.
In Bava Kama. Korid of Acha. Nafshe, sort of Acha, applied to himself the expression, somebody to whom bad is done, good is not soon going to be done for him. And somebody who has good done to him is not going to soon have bad. In other words, basically he's saying, once I lost the opportunity to become a Rosh Hashiva, the opportunity is not going to knock again. So Tosfos points out that actually, yes, in Bava Kama, Rav Acha said, lo'olam in mitivin, like he never has good done for him again.
Yeah,
he was saying, lo'y b'mehera. The verse is, Tosfos says, originally he figured, okay, Rav Ravashi will be the Rosh Hashiva, but eventually I'll have the chance also. When Rav Ravashi ended up being Rosh Hashiva for many years, so then already he eventually realized, lo'olam in mitivin, like once the opportunity knocks once,
why
that's it.
Why is it Rav Ravashi than he really be the Rosh Hashiva there?
I don't know. And need Rosh Hashiva.
He was against the Rabbim, basically, in a way.
No, but the Rabbim accepted him. They were willing to.
After the fact.
And one thing is, also, one of the Mephoshim, also, I think it's Yahu, I think it is, on Ein Yaakov, points out that also the vote may have been that originally Rav Acha Medifti had, Rav Acha had not realized what happened over here. He figured he's still going to have a chance to become Rosh Hashiva. Maybe they can be joint Rosh Hashiva or whatever. Once he saw Ma Rav Ashi is fully established in the position, look, the only way then that he's going to become the Rosh Hashiva is Ma Rav Ashi passes away. He's not going to dab him for that. But they pull the Olam in the chicken. Like, fine, I give up. It's never going to happen.
It was a respectful way of saying that he's not going to...
Okay. So there you see how a Shota had Nevuah. Okay. Tinoikos Maihi, where do we see an example where a child had Nevuah? Once we find that Rav Chista's daughter was sitting in her father's lap, and Rava and Rami Bachama were sitting in front of Rav Chista as Tamidim. So Rav Chista asked her, Man minayo boys, which of these two Tamidim of mine do you want to marry? Amrale, she says to him, Tavayu, both of them.
There you go.
Rava v'ano basra. The Rava says, in that case, I want to be the second one. And Hagoyt Abach had Rechain Hava. That's actually what happened. Now, what does that mean? What does that mean? Does he want Rami Bachama to die? Has to shalom.
Right.
So what it is like this. Marshall explains. No, Rava figured, fine. Look, she said something. It's a certain degree of nevuah, as we're saying over here. Therefore, what does it mean? It means one of them is going to have to marry her and then divorce her, and then the other one. It can mean that one of them will die, but we don't want to ask for that. It can mean one of them will divorce her and the other one will marry her. Marshall explains like this. There's a Gemara in Pesachim that advises against marrying a divorcee. Rami Bachama was concerned about that. Therefore, Rami Bachama did not say Vanna Basra, because if Rava married her first, he wouldn't want to marry her afterwards because of that. Rava wasn't concerned about that. Therefore, he has no problem marrying a Grusha. Therefore, fine. If she's going to end up, if she's destined to marry both of us. Because it is brought in the Gemara, but fine. It's Midas Chassidus or whatever. It's not something you have to do. So therefore, he felt that it doesn't apply to him. Of necessity, therefore, then I'll be the second one.
So,
in the event, though, Rami Bachama did pass away and Rava married, there is another explanation, though, that some of the Mephoshim say, which is that Rami Bachama may have been a kohen. In that case, if we go with this thing about divorcing, then fine, Rami Bachama can't say, I should be the second one, because that would amount to saying, I hope that Rava dies after he marries her, because that's the only way you can marry her. Rava, according to many opinions, was not a kohen, and therefore, which is actually a choice that discusses that in a few other places, therefore it would be less of an issue for him yet.
So in Baba Kama, Baba Kama said to Rukhista to be mishtamishim with his hat in order to hear the Mishnah that we were in the beginning.
Yeah, yeah.
That was his father.
That's his father. Or he wasn't so his father. Yeah.
He got in trouble there probably.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Another vort of Agata. Since we mentioned one thing of Rav Avdimi de Min Chayfa about Nevuah, which brought us into this whole discussion about Nevuah of Shoytim and Tinokas, so now another one. Amar Rav Avdimi de Min Chayfa, Kodem Sheyochel Adam Reyishta Yeshle Shtei Levavos. Before a person eats and drinks, it's like he has two hearts. Like he can't think straight. La'acha Sheyochel V'Shoytse Ein Le'el Le'Vecha. After he eats and drinks, he only has one heart. He feels better. As we learned in Baba Kama and Baba Matia, rather, that eating breakfast in the morning helps clarify a person's mind and has a lot of other good things. Shenema, ish novuv yulavev, as the Pasuk says, a person who is novuv is yulavev. Yulavev is the Meloshin more than one lave.
And
novuv means hollow. You have the mizbeach, the mizbeach achitzen, is described as novuv luchos, a hollow board. It was made hollow, it was made with boards all around, and the hollow, the inside of it, was filled up with earth whenever they set up the Mishkan, each of the places they wandered in the desert. So we see that Nevuv means hollow. So when a person is hollow, he's got no food in his stomach, then you love him, it's like he has two hearts. Amar of Huna Bredi Rav Yeshua, here's another thing. Harogu b'yayin, if somebody is used to drinking wine, in moderate amounts, of course, afilu libri otum ki besula, that even if his heart is closed up, like a besula was closed up because she still has her besula, yayin mefakli, wine opens him up and makes him more able to give out what he's learned. As we find, for example, the Alta Devibun in Tanya from a Gemara, I think in Yoma, that the Chamra Berechni Pachin, that wine and good smells made me smarter and helped me open up to teach my students better. Shenema, v'sirosh yunovev v'solos. As the Pasuk says, wine opens up the yunovev, the same words, nevuv, like hollow, v'solos. So even if a person is like a v'sola, closed off, yunovev makes him open. No, yeah. The wine does that. Okay. You want to do we still have the head to go a little bit further, at least until the top of your gimel?
Yeah.
All right. Okay. What about you, Ryan?
Probably make it.
Okay. All right. Okay. Going back to halacha now. Omer of Huna Bredi Rav Yeshua. Pshita. Now, it's obvious the following din. Chelik b'chor v'chelik poshut. If you have brothers who are dividing up their father's inheritance, we know the Bechor gets a double portion. He gets twice as much as each of the other brothers. Obviously, the Bechor gets his two portions, Yavin and Le'achad Metzvah. It's obvious that he gets those two portions next to the other.
You mean a field?
Yeah, a field. Let's say, so this is the field we're dividing up. So we would say, for example, let's say, imagine you only have two children. The Bechor is going to get two-thirds of it. The other is going to get one-third. Obviously, we make the Bechor's two portions contiguous. Yeah. The question is, Yavam Mai. What about in the case of a Yavam? What about, so you have a one of the brothers, is Miyabim, his dead brother's wife, and he inherits that brother's property. So Mephoshim discussed over here at some length whether this means, are we talking about this is before the father died, and that, or are we talking about it's only if he does the Yavam after the father died? There may be a difference over there. Anyway. Because one way of looking at it is it's before the father dies, so now by the time the father dies, the original brother is dead, and he did Yibum, therefore, sure, at that point, he should be considered like a Bechor, and he's getting two portions. So then, of course, you would think you'd get them contiguous.
Right.
As opposed to maybe, for example, if the Yibum only took place after the father died, maybe the guy originally inherited his property. Now you're going to have that you're taking over his property, not necessarily would it be contiguous. Okay. So. Yavam Mai. So what would be the din by Yavam? Amar Abaya Hihi. Abaya says same thing. This does not mean, by the way, that Abaya laughed. at a seventh grade Rebbe, I still remember who once gave us a test on this Gemara, multiple choice. What does it mean, Amar Abaya Hihi? And that was kind of So it does not. No. So Abaya says it's the same thing. A Yavam would just get the same way. His two portions would be contiguous. Would be next to each other, just like a Yavam. My time a Bechor Kali Rachmana. Why? Because the Torah calls him a Bechor. When the Torah introduces the concept of Yavam, it says Behoya ha Bechor Asher Teled. And we learned in Yavamis that does not mean the Bechor who is born after the Yavam that she bears. It means the Bechor is the one who is supposed to do the Yavam. Asher Teled teaches us a different din that she has to be capable of giving birth. not an Eilonis. So the Bechor is the primary one who's supposed to do Yibum. Whichever one ends up doing the Yibum becomes, in that sense, like a Bechor. Therefore, we should. So we learned in Yevamos what it is the Bechor is the one who's supposed to do the Yibum. If, for whatever reason, he is unable, unwilling, or whatever, then any of the other brothers can do it. Rava Amar, Rava says no. Amar Krava Hoya HaBachor. No, because the Pasuk describes him by saying, and it shall be the Bachor, meaning Hava Yosei to Bachor. Yes, his being is like a Bachor in the sense that he has a double portion. Then Chalukasei to Bachor, but his division of the land is not necessarily like a Bachor. Not necessarily is entitled to two contiguous portions.
Stretching.
Yeah, but that's what it means. Otherwise, you could say, well, Hava
Yosei, you can say that him and his belongings.
No, but that's what it means. Hava Yosei means his being, he is like a Bachor in that he has a double portion, but not necessarily is it together yet. And that's the halacha, like Rava, as usual. Here's a case. There was a case of a person who bought some land next to the property of Dvei Nashia. Now, usually Dvei Nashia usually means his father-in-law. And that's how Tosfos explains it over here. Now, what does it have to do with his father-in-law? The vote is, Tosfos says, his father-in-law only had daughters, in which case the daughters are going to end up inheriting him, in which case one of those daughters is married to him. He's going to eventually take over that property.
A portion of that daughter, or
yeah, in other words, if the father is Flocha, let's say, so he has five daughters, Chav, Machla, Noya, etc. This son-in-law, let's say, is married to Machla, let's say. So her father's Yerusha is going to be split among the five of them. He bought some property next to the part that was owned by Flocha, let's say. So now when they're dividing up the property, he wants the part near the part that he bought. Rashi says rather that over here, Bein Nasha means differently than usual. Over here, Rashi understands that it means his father's karka. So his father owned some karka. He bought a plot of land next to it. Now, later on, when his father died and he and his brothers are dividing up the Yerusha, he wants the part closest to his land in order that it should be contiguous, sort of like the Din of Bar Metzra.
What's the difference between a father and father-in-law?
Well, either way, but according to Rashi, it means, in other words, that the father-in-law presumably had sons also, in which case it's not negated to him. He's not going to be inheriting anything. Ki kopalgu, so now when it came time to divide up the property, Amalai pliguli amitzroi, he argues, give me a portion next to the field that I bought, like the dinim bametzra. So Rabba says he has a valid point. He can force the other ones to do that. It's called Zenen of Azalei Chaser. He stands to benefit from it. They have no loss if they give him that as opposed to some other strip of land. They have to do that. However, Rabbi Yosef asks, why? Why can't the other brothers say to him? That's another thing also. According to Rashi, you have to be talking about brothers, therefore you have to be talking about his father. According to Tosfos, you would have to change the girsa, not Achi, but Achvase. Rather sisters.
Right.
Yeah. Okay, anyway. So, why can't the brothers or the sisters or whatever say, Ma'alinan le iluya kibay bar merion? Why can't they say, we consider this particular plot of land to be really high quality, like a land of bar merion, this rich person that we learned about the other day, about his yisoyimim. So, therefore, in other words, they can say, we have sometimes this particular plot is better off as far as being better watered or whatever than the other ones. Not necessarily. Well, we don't want to give it to you without compensation or whatever. Yeah. Which in fact, yeah, he can tell them I'll compensate you for it. Yeah. The halacha of Yosef, and in fact the halacha is like Rav Yosef.
That
they can refuse. Yeah. Tosfos has a different explanation in Ma'alin and Lay debate.
Regardless of the quality of the earth, or
yeah, because they can argue that sometimes one is better than the other. Yeah.
To prove it.
No, not necessarily. Alonu hima shabachas. Rashi says to us, we consider it as important. Yeah. Tosfos has a different explanation of Ma'alin and Lake to Bay Nixa to Bay Mamarian. Tosfos explains that it means we're not going to just give it to you just like that. We're only going to allow you to take it only if you pay us a very high price.
Right.
We're going to be like the people of Bimerion. Bimerion are rich people. They're not going to just sell Kauka for any old reason. They would sell Kauka only for a high price because they don't really need the money that much. Therefore, if you're willing to pay us an extra high price, then we're willing to sell it to you, but otherwise not. Okay. Another din.
That's Tosfos's
way of explaining. The halacha is like Rabbi Yosef, according to either of these explanations. Yeah. Okay. How about another case? Today arasa, today nagri. Suppose that there are two plots of land. Suppose that there are two plots of land where each one has its own canal.
Today
arasa, you have two plots of land, today nagri, but next to two canals. So, in other words, Rashi explains, let's say, for example, again, you have a field that needs to be divided between two brothers. There's a canal running along one side of it, and so And so now, let's say, for example, okay, this is the field. There's a canal here and there's a canal here. The one brother bought a plot of land over here next to this canal. So it's next to one half of the field and it's canal. So, Omer Rabba Kagrinza Kokan Amida Stoma. Again, Rabba argues in that case he has the ability to say, I want Dapka this half of the field when we're dividing it, because next to mine it would be Mida Stoma to refuse me. Again, Omer Rabbi Yosef, no. Masking for Rabbi Yosef. Mida Stoma, because it would be like acting like a person of Stoma to say otherwise,
yeah, right.
to say that you don't have a right because I'm going to be. Yeah, to be Kuria. Yeah, exactly. Masking for Rabbi Yosef. However, Rabbi Yosef asks on that, Zimnin, high midril, the high midril. Why? Why can't the other brother argue? Fine, it's an advantage for you. You'll have your two fields next to each other. Fine. On the other hand, if I give you this and I take this, what happens one day? This canal may dry up. Canals sometimes dry up. So therefore, I don't want to just say, Samazoy, I'm going to give you this and then. And we have to consider how likely are the respective things to dry up. And again, the halacha is Yosef. Again, the halacha is Yosef.
He can refuse.
He can refuse, yeah. Yeah.
He can say, that happens to be a better stream. You've already got a property near that stream.
Stream, therefore, I want the one by the other stream, right? Yeah. By that stream also, right?
Yeah.
Another case. Tauti achad nigra. What happens if the two plots of land are both along one canal? Amar Rav Yosef, you're going to Kofan Amid Aslam. So now Rav Yosef is
here
the one.
Here we have the case that they're
both on their own. Here we have the two canals, one here.
Right.
And you have the land that has to be split. Here we're talking about now you have one canal running along the length, and the land is going to be split into two parts, this and this. So Rav Yosef says, you're going to the Kofan Amid Aslam. Sure, in that case, Kofan Amid Aslam. If one of them says, I want this. Now he agrees. Yeah, that's just the case of Amid Aslam. Sure. Masters are Abaya, but now Abaya comes in with the question. Masi Hama, but in the Apish Arise. Why can't the other brother argue? On the contrary, maybe I'm better off when you have two fields that are separate on the two sides of mine. In other words, so you have your field over here next to this canal. Now we have this field that needs to be split up. You're arguing you should get this half closer to yours, and I should get this half. I would argue, Fakir, I'm better off having this one over here because you are going to need then an oris for this and for this, and you're going to have a reason on both sides. My field will automatically be protected by the fact nobody's going to come into my field because they're going to see a reason working in yours. There's different other explanations that Rishonim have that maybe he means faker, that I want to have more arisim because this way if I have one who's not doing a good job, I can have the other one take over for him, whatever. Okay. The halacha is like Yosef, however, the halacha is like Yosef in this case. A pushy lab milsidi, to say that I want to have the field in the middle because there'll be a reason on both sides, that's not considered a valid enough reason to say that he has an argument to say that you shouldn't get two contiguous fields. Okay. One more case. Chad gisa nagra v'chad gisa nahara. Suppose you have a field where on one side of it there's a river and on one side of it there's a canal. Now, a river has a river is much better because a river generally doesn't dry up. A canal can dry up. How do we divide it in a way that should be fair, that each one should get property closer to the river and property closer to the canal? We divide it on diagonal. So according to Rashi, it means we can see the diagram here. Rashi, you divide it like a pizza pie. So each one will get one portion close to the river and one portion close to the canal. And also, each one will get two portions that are further away from them, respectively. Okay, Maram points out that actually, according to the division, if we look at what Rashi has over here, you still have Shimon has a slight advantage over Reuven, because Shimon's one in the corner over here, Shimon's one in the upper right corner over here touches the river on a corner. The corresponding one for Reuven down on the lower left corner only touches the canal on its corner. Nevertheless, though, he says, still, the fact of the matter is they all meet in the middle over there, which is far away from anything, so therefore it's considered even enough. However, Tosfos has a different explanation, and you can see the diagram in Tosfos, that you're talking about a field where on one corner of it you have a river, and on the other corner of it you have a canal. You divide it diagonally, so each one has, that I'm a multiple and similarly, that way each of them has part of the river and part of the canal.
Because
otherwise it wouldn't be right. You can't
too
give
many
one
of pieces of pie. It's too confusing.
So that's the point of Rashi. It's too many pieces of pie. And in fact, for that reason, the Meiri says, I don't understand. Why would you divide Karka? Who would want to divide Karka that way into non-contiguous slices like this? But okay, if that's the only way to do it, if that's what they agree to, then fine. But again, according to Tosfos, we're just talking about you do one diagonal over here, but the point is, you don't want to give one of them the river and the other one the canal. What if the canal dries up? They both have the river and they both have
that's
the canal,
fair.
And therefore that's fair. Yeah.
That's fair.
All right.
But of course, it's a different picture.
Yeah, we're talking about two. Yeah, we're talking different scenarios,
places,
of course.
Yeah,
we're talking different scenarios, of course. Yeah.
But the principle is
still you try to make it as fair as possible.
Right.
Yeah.